Cool. So next up, we had someone that flew all the way from, I think, West Brussels.
Close.
Yeah, so we have a Belgian person, which is nice. He's going to be talking about functional programming. Go. Round of applause for him, please.
Okay. Thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? Yep. Okay, great. So I'm Dylan. I'm going to be talking about functional programming in Go. And so when you look at these languages, one does not look like the others. Most of them are obviously functional languages, and Go is actually kind of an outlier here. Well, it kind of looks like that when you look at a lot of open source libraries out there. Most of them are programmed in the same kind of pseudo-object-oriented way. But if you look at Go, the description is it's a multi-paradigm language. You don't really have to stick to using objects everywhere. So when people think of what is a functional language, quite a few things come to mind. So you can have a declarative language, right? So in a functional language, you tend to say what you want, but not how you want to get it. So in Haskell, you would say sum, and then a list of numbers, and it will return the sum of the numbers. While in C, you would iterate over the list and basically keep the sum in a variable and keep updating it and then return the result at the end. Of course, you want first-class functions, which Go completely supports. Often pattern matching, that kind of goes hand in hand with recursion. Those languages tend to be very heavily on recursive side. You tend to have pure functions, so we'll go in depth on that a bit more. And immutable functions, so you have your state and your state of your objects doesn't change throughout the life cycle. You create new objects instead of modifying one. And actually many, many more things. A scary word is monads. That's something that people relate with functional programming. But the question then is, why would you want this? Why do you want to do this in Go? And, well, you create safer programs. You have easier concurrency, right? You have no shared state, so you can run things in parallel without really influencing each other. You're going to have less code, but be more expressive. So normally I would say, like, having just one line of code instead of 10 lines of code could be a bad idea if you're doing something traditional in Java. But yeah, if you read Haskell, that one line, just 10 lines of work, but it's very, very expressive, and you can understand it. So that's an advantage. They tend to be easier to debug and easier to test. Everything can run independently. And yeah, it just makes using such a language kind of a pleasure to use. One of the complaints of those languages is they don't have an IDE very often, but, well, the tools are good enough in the language that you don't really need them that often. So that's what you're going to get out of functional programming. So let's jump into some examples. This talk will mostly focus on how to use the functions and higher order functions. So you have pure functions. So the basic idea is your function will not produce a side effect, right? That makes them more testable, and you can run them concurrently. So in a traditional example, you have A, you run a function lambda, and you get B as a result, right? That's how every function works in a functional language. In Go, you could actually have a function A. So A goes to a function lambda, and it calls change name. And suddenly that object A actually has a different name, but it's not a new object. So you have now introduced a state that is modifiable. So in code, a simple pure function would look like this. You have greet, hello, it takes a variable, it returns hello and then the name of the person. It will always do the same thing, and it's safe. In a bad example, you want to count how often this function is called. And call counter is modified in the function. I mean, there's more wrong with this code because it's a global in this case. And so now if you run this function many, many times, well, what will call counter be? Depends how often you run it. If it runs in parallel, depends how far in the execution the program is, right? So different function calls might be at different steps of execution, and you can't know what your call counter will be when your function has exited. So in a more Go sense, so if we remove the global, we can still get this kind of behavior by having a rename method in this case. And so we're using a pointer now to a person, so the method receiver, and we modify it. Now, luckily, this function is called rename, so you expect the name to be changed. Right? But any function that receives a method pointer, you don't know how it will change your object. If it's 10 lines of code that says do something, well, what parts of your object are changed, you don't really know at this point. Right. But if you call a function like this, which takes a value instead of a pointer, you know that whatever happens, your original object is still intact. You still have it. So the calling function has two copies. It has the original version, and it has a function, well, a return value from the rename. And so this kind of gets the reaction quite often, like, OK, but now I'm using values everywhere, and performance is gone. Right? As a side note, that's just not the case in Go. Values are faster than pointers in many, many cases. Right? There's places where you want to use pointers, but pointers live on the heap, generally, not always. And that's garbage collected, and that is slower. So if you use values, you're constantly on the stack, and stack operations are push and pop, and they're quite fast. So idempotent functions. So functions should always produce the same result for the same input. So x goes in, y goes out. It's always the same for every x, the same y comes out. And you're going to violate this somewhere. Because for some programs to be useful, you don't want this. If you're programming a game, part of it is that you need some kind of randomized function. Something needs to happen randomly. Well, you don't know what the output will be because, well, it's random. So a simple idempotent function is uppercase. Every time you get a lowercase input, the uppercase will be the same, right? But now if you have this function, which basically it says set the update time. So you create a row in a database somewhere, and you want to keep the timestamp of when this happened, and you do it in Go. And you call time.now. If you call the function now, or 2 seconds later, well, the result is going to be different. So you can't test this anymore. A way around this is by basically wrapping this in another function that takes the time as a variable as well. Right, so now this set update time could be unit tested, because you provide the time and you know what the output will be on the send time. Of course, the calling function will still call time.now, but you've basically managed to contain most of the logic in an idempotent and a pure function, and the calling function will need to do something messy. But the core functions can be tested. And so the idea would be that your whole program consists of these small testable functions, and then you chain them together in ways that you need them. So first-class functions or higher-order functions, like people who come from other languages like Java and stuff, they're starting to do this as well. So you have a slice of strings, and you take basically a predicate function that tells you if your string satisfies the predicate, yes or no, it returns a simple Boolean. And if it satisfies the predicate, your output list will basically append it, and then you return the result of every element that matches your filter method. Right? So you can create a function called longStrings, which returns true if the string is longer than 10. You call this in the main function, and basically you've written now a higher order function because you pass your longStrings function to the filter function that is using this. If you would imagine that the left part does not exist, that would be declarative programming on the right. So the main function is saying filter by x, and it's not telling you how to filter. So the loop is abstracted away, basically. And if we continue with higher order functions, we can also use closures.